Hey, y'all, during this episode, you're going to hear me and Allison talk about HB2 at different points during this episode, and you will also hear Allison talk about a secret meeting that's going on while we're recording. So I wanted to do an update right now before the show starts because we have an update in between the time when we recorded this episode and when I edited it and released it. So HB2 was passed out of committee. And it does have, they do have a plan to vote on the bill in front of the full House tomorrow. So listen to the show to learn more about what the bill is about. But basically, it would allow public taxpayer dollars to go to private unaccountable schools. It, you know, basically siphons money away from our schools and communities. You probably understand kind of the charter school situation if you listen to this show. But basically, HB2 is their bill to try to kind of subvert that Supreme Court decision that happened later last year. So it has passed a committee. It is on its way to the floor tomorrow, which was a big surprise, big secret, one of those very non-transparent things that happened. So know that happens. You know, people are trying to go to Frankfurt tomorrow. So if you listen to this before the 13th, know that is going to happen. I think that there's some people convening at 2:00 tomorrow. So if you hear this before then, try to check that out if you can. All right. Thanks. I hope you enjoyed your update. Now here's the rest of the episode. Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me this week is Allison Wiseman. Allison, how are you today?
I'm anxiously waiting for Louisville men's basketball to play at 4:30 and then for the season to be maybe over and then just continue on the happiness
that
I felt today in the 70-degree weather.
I had planned to make jokes about UofL basketball playing in the middle of this recording to you. We are recording a little bit earlier than we would normally record for both Allison and my benefit. But yes, I will let you know, I have the game on a second screen, and I will let you know scores as we go along here.
Oh, Allison. Robert.
Because I know you're locked in. I know you're locked into the...
You act like I don't have the TV on as well right behind me so I can just watch
I'm shocked. All of the Louisville fans I know are like, well, I'm not even watching. I don't even care. So kudos to you.
I typically don't watch. Like, sometimes I will literally get a text about the game and I'll have to respond, wait, we're playing. But this one, it's a little more bittersweet. So yeah. I'm going to tune in and probably be upset, but it's fine.
Yeah, we're going to have to check this incredible Georgia Tech Notre Dame game that is just turned into like a real barn burner here at the end. So if we're distracted, you just let us know. All right, for the show, it's me and Allison talking, no guests or anything. And it's going to be a session update. We probably have been a little remiss in not talking enough about session over the past few weeks here on the show. But we're talking about all kinds of stuff. We're talking about, I think, 9 or so different things having to do with this session. And Allison, I tried to like split this up into like groups, and I think the groups are bad. I have decided that the groups are bad, but we're going to go with them anyway, and you can tell me what you think. So the three groups are what has happened already. So stuff that's like, you know, stuff that's happened. So the thing that has happened is, you know, there was a veto by Governor Beshear that got overridden. There were some changes to an open records bill that happened, and there were some changes to the labor bill. I think we've talked about both of those in the past, but those are things that happened. Like, there were some changes made. Then the second thing I wanted to talk about is what could happen. Some things that are kind of on the horizon that we're concerned about. And so splitting up JCPS, how that's moving along, what might happen there, what might happen in terms of partisan Board of Election, Board of Education seats. That's something we want to talk about too, and what might happen with the drag ban bill this year, SB 147. So those are things that might happen in the future. And the last thing is stuff that we just don't know what's going on. We're just very confused about what's happening. And that is, first of all, about school choice, which there are two bills which we've talked about, and there hasn't been a lot that's happened. And then, you know, stuff happened yesterday after I came up with these titles. And then what's up with Safer Kentucky? So that the HB 5, the House Bill 5 bill that we have talked about in the past, that one is in a confusing spot for sure. So we'll be talking about that. And then lastly, what is up with President Stiver's higher ed bill? That is something we talked about too. So we're going to end on a little bit of good news, I think. So there you go. So Allison, are you ready to talk about Andy Beshear's first veto of the session.
I'm just laughing at how much has changed for some of these things in 24 hours.
Yeah, I know. And I, like, was not paying close attention today because I was, like, working. So this is probably already out of date by the time of, like...
Which is nuts.
You can, we'll get into that. You can correct me and give me any updates that I have missed. Okay, so the first thing is that Andy Beshear had his first veto of the session when... then the bill was about the income discrimination... source of income discrimination. So both Louisville and Lexington have an ordinance in place. Lexington just passed theirs that would ban landlords for denying someone access to housing, denying their application for housing because of the source of their income. So you can't, if you have a Section 8 voucher, if you have some other sort of public assistance that is allowing you to make ends meet and pay for your rent, you know, there are some landlords out there that are like, nah, I don't want that. And will deny you housing. And that's really crappy. And so the cities made that illegal. The state, of course, stepped in and said, we love that. We love it when landlords choose to keep people out on the streets. So we're going to pass a bill to make source of income discrimination legal and preempt Louisville and Lexington's ordinances, which is one of the first times that's happened, I think. Andy Beshear vetoed this bill at the Beecher Terrace Community Center. That's in the West End. That is in an area that does have a lot of people that live in Section 8 housing, a lot of people who utilize Section 8 vouchers in that area. And one of the quotes is, quote, "We should never make it harder for someone to obtain a roof over their head, a safer place to call home, and that's exactly what this bill tries to do. We should be working to help people, never to harm them," unquote. So that, you know, harsh words from Andy Beshear. He's usually like trying to bend, you know, mend fences and make people out to seem not so bad. But yeah, this is a bad, this is like as close to Andy Beshear gets to, this is really cruel as you get. Of course, after the veto, the legislature moved very quickly to override the veto. Senate President Stivers said, quote, "We think it is good policy and a protection of landowner rights," unquote. And, quote, "The reality is the city of Louisville and the city of Lexington have a homelessness problem directly related to their bad policies that they passed," unquote. I think that the policies they passed to try to mitigate some of the homelessness problem is source of income discrimination, which, you know, it's tough to pass bills and then have, you know, the strategy for dealing with homelessness just preempted by the state legislature. So in reality, what's going on is that rent has increased in every corner of urban Kentucky and rural Kentucky. I mean, rent's just gone up everywhere, and it's been harder and harder to find affordable housing. I will say that there is a lot of good news on the horizon in Louisville, and I think in Lexington too, but I know a little bit more about the situation in Louisville, where the housing stock is expanding very quickly, but of course it takes a long time to build buildings, so those are not here yet. And anyways, this bill hurts the people who need the help the most. This was the first, but it will not be the last veto by Andy Beshear this session. So, Allison, this is just bad. Anything you want to have to say besides, wow, this is bad?
I mean, is there anything else to say? First of all, I agree. This is as close as we'll get to Andy saying that he's mad. This is Andy's way of saying he is mad. But, you know, it's... As a renter myself, I mean, renting is expensive. It's ridiculous how expensive it is. And the Republican Party wants to complain about, you know, people who are houseless, people living on the streets in Louisville and Lexington and in other parts of the Commonwealth, really. And this is also a national talking point. I was watching a segment on LA's houseless crisis the other day on CNN. But when you're writing a policy like this that prevents someone to get access to housing, like, you just sound dumb. And that's just what this is. It's just dumb.
It is just
dumb.
And
it's so unfortunate. I'm glad the governor vetoed it. Also, very strategic place to do this veto at the new Beach Terrace Community mm-hmm. Center. And so it's... There's nothing else to say than it's just dumb.
Yeah, I agree totally. One thing that I think is, like, you know, the one of the big problems with, you know, the legislature in general is, you know, who are they talking to that are renters? And who are they talking to? And I would say the answer to that is probably not that many people. They don't, you know, remember or realize that, you know, if you are a renter, you are subject to a lot of changes in what you have to pay for housing on an annual or biannual basis as you have to re-sign your lease, find another place to live. If you want to stay there, you know, you are subjected to rent increases if your landlord decides to do that, which if you have a mortgage is not the case. You pay the same amount on your mortgage for the entire period that you have the mortgage under yep. most mortgages. Not all mortgages, but most mortgages. However, a lot of the people in the legislature probably know people who rent houses or own are landlords. And so, you know, it's not to say that, you know, being a landlord is the easiest thing in the world. There are some challenges associated with it, but it's very lucrative often, and that is why people do it. And I think that the legislature is much more likely to listen to the problems of the landlords and ignore the problems of the renters. And that is where we're at with that.
Yep, I agree. And like I said, I'm a renter myself, and my roommate and I have lived in our apartment in Louisville since July of 22. And when we re-signed our lease last year, our rent went up.
Yeah.
Without cause.
True of everybody. Yeah, true of many people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Looked and was like, this is about $100 more than what we started with just a year ago. Mm. I'm not, granted, it's only $100, so $50 between us, but it went up for no reason at all. And so this is something that many Kentuckians, you know, deal with. And I wouldn't be me without talking about this topic without mentioning Philip Wheeler, the senator's thumbs up pose he did in this group photo on the Senate floor after this veto override happened. I guarantee you there are renters in his districts. I believe his district's Pike County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In that area of Appalachia. And I know renters myself.
There's a lot of renters in those areas
in
for sure.
In that district, who I hope saw their senator throwing his thumbs up in the air for the fact that he just made it harder for them to get rent. So,
Allison, you want to get even madder?
No, but sure.
When I was a renter a million years ago, I had an apartment across the street from Bloom Elementary in the Highlands. One bedroom apartment. It was $650 a month.
That makes me sick. That makes me so sick.
Yeah. Rent's gone up.
You don't want to know.
I don't want to know. Yeah.
How much I was paying in Washington, D.C.
Oh, no. D.C. is always nuts. We're trying to catch
that him. That was four girls basically fitting in a three-bedroom house.
Oh, fun.
We kind of, you know, went around the system a little bit. Our landlord let us. But yeah, if we wouldn't have done that and done a four-bedroom house with four people, it would have been even more. It's just ridiculous.
Did you have to sleep in the closet? Were you the fourth person?
No, I was actually in the study. The other roommate and I shared the basement. She was in the main portion of the basement, and I was in the study room. Because the third bedroom was, I'm not kidding you, the smallest bedroom I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, you literally, it has to be for a baby that you would just put a crib in, and that's about it.
Yeah. That's well.
So that's what that looked like.
Washington, D.C. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
All right. Next thing, changes to the open records bill. So House Bill 509 in its original form was a significant and negative change to Kentucky's open records law. I believe we talked about this a few weeks ago, but if we haven't, here's your update. The original bill caught the eye of the press and other watchdog groups because it made significant changes to the definition of what a public record is in a way that would have kept a lot of stuff more secret. So the chief sponsor of the bill is John Hogsden, who is in Jefferson County. He's down in, like, I think, like, south of Middletown, like, down out by, like, Fisherville, I think is, like, technically where he is. And he's had several conversations with advocates on the bill. So he has been willing to take some meetings, and that's good, you know. He has made some changes to it, and that's good. However, you know, not everybody is fully pleased with the changes that were made to it. So, you know, I do think that they made some updates to what a public record is, so that kind of more reflects like reality and does prevent, you know, secrets from being kept by, you know, government agents and elected officials, etc. But Amy Benson Haver, who I would say is probably Kentucky's biggest advocate for transparency, agree with her or disagree with her, which if you are a cool person, you probably do both. She is very down the line. She agrees and disagrees with people based on their views on transparency, and that's about it. So it's worth paying attention to her when she talks about transparency. But she wrote about this. I forget where I saw it. It might have been on – actually, I think it was on Forward Kentucky, our partner website, which she wrote about the differences that she had with Representative Hogsden in his final – language for the bill. And I thought she was very generous with him, but she was also very fair. So I'm going to say a little bit about what she had to say. So the bill would continue to allow public servants to talk about public policy and other public affairs related to their jobs on their personal devices and other forms of non-public communication without being subject to the open records system. So right now, if you say anything, it's technically subjected to the open records, system. If you're talking about it, that's the way it goes. But what Benson Haver said, quote, when a person accepts a position in public service, wins election, or receives an appointment to public office, and when the person communicates about the business of the agency he or she serves, that person is no longer a private actor entitled to personal privacy protection for communications about public business on his or her private or public device or account, unquote. So basically saying, like, hey, you took the job, you ran for office, you got it. Now you have to, you have to be a public actor in everything that you do. I think that that's a pretty compelling argument, but also, like, that's pretty strict. And she's pretty strict about transparency. She is very much into transparency. I do think the bill has made some improvements. You know, if I had a vote, I'd vote against it. But, I do think it is good that, John Hoggs didn't listen to it. I also thought it was really good that Amy Benson Haver came forward and talked about some of the problems. It has yet to pass a chamber, but I do think that this is like its final form before it starts moving. So, Alice, anything you have to say about transparency or, Amy Benson Haver's argument there?
I agree with you that on the substance, I believe this is a very compelling argument. I think, like you, I probably would vote no for it, but it is compelling in a sense of what it means, to be a public person, basically. I will say, during all the work that I have been doing on my good friend Rick Adams' campaign for House District 41, who does a lot of, litigation about open records requests and this, bill and everything, stuff that involves open records, I've learned a lot about how this is actually a real big problem in mm-hmm. Kentucky. A lot of people don't abide by open records laws, and they do need to be fixed and addressed. And I think, like I said, at the end of the day, this is a compelling argument. I also think back to transparency at the beginning of the session when none of the pre-filed bills were made public.
Right.
To the public.
Yeah.
And it's just, there was just a big transparency problem in the Commonwealth, it feels like. And I like that she is advocating for this and other people are advocating for and trying to address it. I just don't feel like I am qualified enough to even know what the right avenue is here to make this better.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough subject because on one hand, like, I feel like there are much bigger fish to fry in terms of transparency around the legislature specifically. The way in which that they do shell bills, the way in which they do committee substitutes. And we talked a lot about that at the beginning of the session, and the League of Women Voters did a lot of really good work around the ways that the legislature hides things from us. So while I do think that, like, that's the big transparency issue, the other piece of it is that we have this open record system that we just, like, don't want to be watered down, and they are actively trying to do that. So, like, preventing bad things from happening is, you got to do that. But then also, like, if you're able to solve that, you're basically able to maintain the status quo. Forget about, like, actually pushing forward and making the legislature more transparent than it is now. They love to be sneaky. That is their favorite thing to do.
I mean, we'll talk about this later, but the prime example of being sneaky is this last minute reading of the bill and meeting of the bill for the constitutional amendment for school choice that's currently happening right now. That was called about an hour ago after the House adjourned. So...
wow.
Prime example.
I'm really glad we got you around today, Allison, because I didn't even know about that.
Prime example of being sneaky.
Yeah, they do love to be sneaky. Okay, last thing in terms of what's happened already is the changes to the labor bill. So there's a couple of different labor bills we've been talking about this session. The one that I'm talking about right now is HB 500, which is Phil Pratt's bill that eliminated lunch breaks, cut the ability of workers to earn overtime, and eliminated the need for employers to basically pay employees to travel between work sites. So similar to John Hogson, Philip Pratt took meetings around it, listened to the criticism, and made some changes to his bill. His bill still doesn't allow workers to earn overtime for working 7 days in a row. He said that, like, only two other states do that. And I'm like, okay, so, like, we're paying our workers more. That sounds good to me. We're doing a good job. And, he's like, no, I don't want to pay people more money, so I prefer not to do that. I would like people to work every day for me. The bill does keep the overtime system changes in place. He did eliminate the language around breaks, and he made significant changes to the language around travel at work. So I think what he was trying to go for was like to say, like, you can't pay for people to drive to work and home from work. Like, and I don't think that is within the law anyways. Now it's more clear that you will have to pay for travel between work sites at work, which, like, that's a big deal if you say run a landscaping company like Phil Pratt does, where the landscapers are often moving from between place to place. Like, that is work that deserves to be paid. It's not just like when you're mowing the grass or whatever. It is when you are getting to the next place. That is, you know, part of your job, and that should be paid. So I'm glad that that change was there. This is still a bad bill. Still a very bad bill. No need for it. We don't need to change this. The system we've got's great. It's actually like not, you know, there's a lot of things that make being a worker in Kentucky really hard and bad. But there's a lot of systems that we have that are a little bit better than the federal government. And we should encourage that. We should treat our workers better than we have to. And that is not the opinion of the Republican Party here in Kentucky. So, all right, anything about HB 500 you want to talk about, Allison? What have I missed about this? Is this like passed now? Is this like a law? Yeah, anything you want to say?
It's just so funny, and not funny at all, but, you know, funny that a dude filed a bill to eliminate lunch.
Yeah.
Like a lunch break.
No lunch for you. Yeah.
Yeah, no lunch for you today. The bill to me is the prime example of why young people and so many people need to pay attention to what's going on. Like, I posted about this bill on my Instagram story a couple weeks ago or whenever, you know, time in session does not exist, but, and I posted about it and I had a few people like respond to my story and were confused by it and were asking more about it. And I was like, this is what happens.
Yeah.
In Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, so I really need you to start paying attention and start voting because you might lose your lunch break. Like, I'm going to be real with you. And so do I think this will pass? I definitely think if it does, the governor will 100% veto it.
Yeah.
But it's just like you had mentioned, why wouldn't we want to be offering pay for our workers who are working like overtime more than 7 days in a row? Like, that would attract people to want to come here.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't make sense to me. I am not a fan of any anti-union legislation at all. I was at a labor info session last night with Rick for the GLCLC endorsement process and learning about labor issues. And they talked about this bill along with House Bill 7, which is I can never properly word what it is, but it's the automated vehicle one.
Yeah,
that bill, the Teamsters were down in Frankfurt yesterday protesting against it. I think it passed out of the House, I believe is what Bill Miller said. But
yeah, it passed.
So there's just been a really odd number of anti-union legislation making the rounds.
Yeah.
This year, which is really odd to me. I guess they pick what section they want to attack in the session. So, you know, last year it was trans kids. You know, a couple of years in a row was public educators. Now we're on the unions and labor.
Well,
all in all, it's a bad bill. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but I definitely think regardless if it passes, the governor is going to veto it.
Yeah, they always go after all of those groups. It's just who gets the most press because of which bill is the worst.
Right. It's like, which bill's the worst?
Yeah.
Which bill is going to attack the most vulnerable people, and let's run with it. That's what it feels like in session the past few years.
Yeah, that HB7 vote was closer than expected expected. It was like 61 to 31, so we did have a lot of people cross the aisle. You know, the labor unions do have some clout. I mean, you know, they got, you know, 31 people to vote against this autonomous view. I don't really understand this bill as well as I should, or why, what their opposition is to it. So I don't want to like speak on it, but, you know, they did get 31 people to vote against it. But this HB 500 is just egregious. It's really bad. And I wonder if it's going to go to the floor. I mean, if they got 31 people to vote against the autonomous vehicles, which was like a confusing thing that, you know, seemed a little necessary at first read. I don't understand the opposition, so I, again, don't want to say anything about it. But, like, that's a confusing issue. No lunch is much simpler.
Everybody understands what that means.
Yeah. The wildest thing about this bill is the sponsor, Phil Pratt, being like, well, people aren't going to take away lunch breaks. I'm like, then why are you passing a bill to let them take away lunch breaks? So, you know, it is what it is. All right. Good insights there. Okay. So that concludes our what has happened section. Now we're going to move into things that could happen. Okay, first on the list here is the splitting up of JCPS. So this has been a priority of the session since before the session kind of started, right? This is like something that has been on the docket. We talked about it, something to watch this session for sure. And Republicans in Louisville are the people who are making this a priority. So that is what's going on there. Ken Fleming, who is a state representative in northeastern Kentucky, he kind of represents like the Prospect area. I think he goes into Oldham a little bit there. He is the person who's like filing the resolution that would call for an audit and a study of JCPS, and it's a House concurrent resolution. So it's actually like even harder to find on the legislature's website than everything else. Anyways, this all happened a while back. This has been happening for since kind of the beginning of session. I think it was like January that this was all filed and we started talking about this. But last week, Marty Polio, who is the superintendent at JCPS, he started kind of fighting back against this move. He showed up in Frankfurt with the JCPS board chair, that's Corey Schull, and they were there to talk to the legislature about the war against JCPS. And as Marty Polio is wont to do sometimes, he's pretty harsh language. Polio attacked the fact that there were other school districts that have similar test scores to JCPS that are not facing the same sort of like audit and a split up kind of conversation. One of his quotes is, quote, "We spend so much of our time talking about other things. I am scared for the future of education in our Commonwealth," unquote. I think what he means there is like, we need to be talking about educating kids, and instead we're like defending, it's like, insane things like putting guns in school or splitting up the district or putting metal detectors that cause there to be like lines looping around schools and that kind of stuff. Like, that we need to talk less about that and talk more about like, how are we going to educate our kids? Other advocates for JCPS within the legislature, like JCPS teacher Tina Bojanowski, made other strong points about how test scores never take into account poverty or other social challenges that are faced by students, many of which are in higher density and higher, there's more kids who face tougher challenges in an urban school district. And how splitting up these districts could actually make these markers worse, because, if we're just basing everything on test scores, like, how is splitting up this going to make anything better? Good question, I think. So this resolution is still sitting in the House. So, Marty Polio obviously thought it was worth coming to Frankfurt to talk about how bad it was, instead of just kind of letting it lie. So I guess they are still making it a priority, but it's just kind of languishing. So, I mean, Allison, what do you think? Do you think that it's going to move this session? Do you think it's like they're waiting for the right moment when nobody's paying attention to do it? Or what do you think's going on here? And just in general, any thoughts about like breaking up JCPS?
First of all, breaking up JCPS is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. It's inequitable, which is the biggest problem here. And also, you have a party who wants to, save money, lower costs, blah, 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 blah. But you break up the district, then you're going to have three to whatever superintendents through two, three rounds of bus drivers, which is already a shortage in general. So then you're going to add more routes because there's going to be more kids needing to be driven from point A to point B. It's just dumb. And what's going to happen is it's going to be thrown in like a sewer bill 2.0 at the end of something to do it. It's really disgusting that Ken Fleming, who is my state representative, is the one spearheading this, because his district has kids who go all over the city. Mm-hmm. My sister is one of them. She lives in Prospect and is bused home from Manual High School. And so this is ridiculous. They've been wanting to break up JCPS for years now. Mm-hmm. The attack on JCPS in Louisville will always be a thing in Frankfurt. And it's really sad to see this. And I'm really glad that Dr. Polio went to Frankfurt along with Corey Schull to, speak out against this and show, that they don't support this because they know it's going to hurt children, especially children in poverty, children, who are in and out of any type of, the foster care system or anything. It's going to hurt kids mm-hmm. who are not privileged enough to be able to have access to, transportation and all the other things needed.
Absolutely.
And so this is just, another attack on Jefferson County Public Schools and public school teachers. And, you know, if it happens, it's going to drive teachers out to the polls like it did in 2019 for Governor Beshear, like it did again last year for Governor Beshear. I mean, you're just driving more people out to the polls to vote against you.
I think. No, you're absolutely right. Very well said. Absolutely correct. We're two JCPS graduates you're listening to here.
Yes.
So that's good. Did your sister, does she have to depot at Ballard? Is that how she gets home?
No, the one sister at Ballard drives, but the one who goes to Manual gets dropped off at Manual in the morning by my mom, because then she goes to her school to teach after that, but then takes the bus home from Manual, and she does, don't think she doesn't have a depot anymore, but last year she had a depot, they got rid of it.
Yeah, I had a depot at Eastern, like, the whole time I was in high school, and sometimes, like, you know, you're waiting on, like, the last bus that got lost or something like that, and... You know, I actually never minded that because there's like more time to play my Game Boy or something.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah. I didn't have to do my homework on the bus. So, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That's good stuff. Thank you for mentioning this. There are ways. Equity is not perfect at JCPS. We have a lot of things that we need to work on. But similar to the open records bill that we were talking about before, we have to kind of defend. We have to spend so much effort and energy defending the status quo. Forget about like trying to actually make any progress. That's kind of the state we seem to exist in right now. All right, talking about partisan Board of Education elections. This is potentially setting up a very interesting system that is bad, but could be interesting. So Senate Bill 8 is a bill that would make seats on the Kentucky Board of Education subject to partisan elections. Currently, the seats on the Board of Education are appointed by the governor. The bill imagines the systems where members would be elected based on the Supreme Court districts. I think it's like two per district or something. So it'd be probably like one each, you know, even numbered year for each of the seven districts. There could be a case made that electing school board members is a way to bring this board closer to the people and make it so that it's more insulated from, you know, the politics in the governor's office, et cetera, et cetera. But there is no reason to make these elections partisan. That is just, there's no reason for it. There's no purpose for it. And doing so really gives away the purpose of the bill. They're trying to make Kentucky's, or trying to use Kentucky's partisan makeup to create a more conservative Board of Education. People know that, you know, low education vote, or not low, low information voters. There you go. That's more appropriate. Low information voters vote based on party. And in Kentucky, low information voters tend to vote Republican, and that would create a more conservative Board of Education that would be willing to do things that are not currently being done on the Board of Education by people who are experts in the field, because that's basically everybody that gets put onto the Board of Education are people who really know what they're doing. In a more functional state, there could probably be a role for the legislature to exert some control over the Board of Education. You know, seats have become increasingly political. The board was used by Matt Bevin to bring in an extremely conservative group of people to run Kentucky's education system. I mean, we had Wayne Lewis, which is a name you may remember from back in the day, who was the Kentucky superintendent there, who was very, very pro-charter, very conservative. And then once Andy Beshear came in, he reversed those changes that were made by Matt Bevin immediately upon taking office. That was a promise he made during the election. It you know, helped him win the election. And I think people reacted to the things that Matt Bevin did, and that's one of the reasons they voted for Andy Beshear. And honestly, all of that is too political. That is too political. And you know, Andy Beshear did what he had to do. Matt Bevin created a problem, and Andy Beshear had to fix it. But the response by the legislature is to basically double down on partisanship, which, if you want to look at this and be like, this is a problem, the problem is it's too partisan, and all they're responding by doing is making it more partisan, which would make the system worse. So really, their issue is not the partisanship in the elections. Their problem is that the Board of Education is not conservative enough. That's why they're pushing this bill. So this bill has passed the Senate. It's passed by a 24-14 vote, which is pretty close by Senate standards. Several Republican senators did cross the aisle to vote against this bill. I do think it will pass the House if it's brought up, and I don't think it's a constitutional amendment. I think it's just a bill, so we would just start doing this. So that's crazy, but that is where we're at. So, Allison, what do you think about all this? What do you think about partisan Board of Election seats?
I just think it's really funny that we're talking about this, but also wanting to make Louisville Metro Council nonpartisan and the mayor's race nonpartisan. Yeah. Very hypocritical to me, if you really want to know my opinion, Robert, and I'm sure the listeners want to know my opinion as well. It's just so hypocritical. I mean, what are we doing? This is all, and I think I had mentioned this when I was on the podcast before the election, or maybe right after, I don't remember. But I called it when Andy Beshear was going to win again. They were going to pull some tomfoolery in this legislature because they're mad that he won again. And this is exactly what's happening. I mean, we're making this now partisan for education. I mean, you make that and that's when you're going to get your far right wing nuts.
Mm-hmm. Which is the goal. Yeah.
Which is the goal. We're going to get libs of TikTok moms out here running for Board of Education. And that's not right for our kids. Mm-mm. That's not right for our education system. That's not right.
Yeah, absolutely not. And
I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But also, is this even constitutional? Like, what's the constitution? I'm no lawyer.
I'm not a lawyer. Jasmine's not here this week. I don't know.
I know Jasmine's not here this week. Anytime I have a law question, I call John Weber or Rick Adams, and I'm like, please help me. But this doesn't even feel... Good thing our governor's a lawyer. Because they'll know. But it's just so hypocritical.
Yeah.
Just so dumb.
It is. I'm really glad you brought up the hypocritical piece. That's a very, very, very good point that they are trying to do the exact opposite to Louisville's government, talking about how bad partisan elections are, and then being like, except for when it's the school board, which, you know, right now a Democrat is putting people on the school board. That's fine with us then. One last thing I'll say is I think that the Republicans are doing this because they think they're going to be able to elect a bunch of Republicans to the school board. And, you know, you might want to watch out. Like, education's like the one issue that I do think voters in Kentucky trust Democrats on more in general. And, you know, it could really, I think, present an opportunity for the Democratic Party in places where it hasn't been well established to run good candidates who care about one specific issue and really win some elections that I think people aren't expecting them to win. If this does come to pass, it will be bad. But, you know, who knows what could happen? There could be some knock-on effects that they don't expect. The last thing in our what could happen section is about the drag ban, which is another thing that is following up from a year prior. So last year there was a ban on drag performance that made a lot of news and made a lot of headlines, and it's back this year. And this year is SB 147. And that bill did pass the Senate. So SB 147 went through some changes before it did get passed. So that's worth mentioning. The original bill would have banned all drag performances of drag in public spaces, which would have included things like drag queen story hour at libraries, which is a fun and exciting event, and other sort of like extremely tame appearances in public spaces. After meeting with a drag queen, which was Mayonnaise, who I think performs here in Louisville, the bill sponsor, who is Lindsay Titchener, who represents a good chunk of Louisville and also represents Oldham and I think part of Trimble County, she apparently said that she realized that not all drag was sexually explicit. So I wonder, I don't know if Mayonnaise have some sort of like incredible communication power, but I know that Lindsay Titchener has been told lots and lots and lots of times that drag is not sexually explicit, but for whatever reason, that one conversation really made it stick. So good for Mayonnaise for breaking through to Lindsay Titchener and succeeding where so many others have failed. You know, the changes Lindsay Titchener did make to the bill said that only sexually explicit drag performances would be banned. But this is the definition of sexually explicit under the bill. Performances in which a performer sings, lip syncs, dances, reads, or otherwise performs before an audience for entertainment while exhibiting an exaggerated gender expression that is inconsistent with the biological sex of the performer using clothing, makeup, or other physical markers, and this expression is caricatured, advertised, or featured aspect of the performance taken as a whole, unquote. That is just the definition of drag. So she says on one hand, wow, I have really been shown how drag isn't always sexually explicit. and then came up with a definition of what sexually explicit drag is that is just a definition of drag. So for all the dog and pony show of Lindsay Titchener having her eyes opened by mayonnaise for the legitimacy of drag, her bill essentially just bans drag the way it would have before. This is a bad bill. It's anti-LGBTQ. It is anti, like, I, you know, LGBTQ, whatever. This is a, like, anti-queer spaces, right? This is just, like, looking at people who have, like, queer proclivities and being like, you do not exist as people in the world that I want to build. And I want to get rid of you. I don't want to see you. I don't want anyone else to see you. You have to go to your corner and hide, because we don't want you to be part of the state that we're trying to build, which is really scary, really sad, and very unfortunate. Like I said, it did pass the Senate. The bill is sitting in the House where it did receive a committee assignment. So, Allison, what do you have to say about SB 147? And has it already passed the House today that I just totally missed or something like that? Anything that I missed?
I don't think it was a red on the House floor today. But I always say people who want to ban drag have never been complimented by a drag queen before. And I stand by that. I think Senator Titchener should go spend one evening at Play Dance Bar or one morning at Les Mew, get a few compliments from a drag queen, and then she might change her mind. But like you said, it's anti-queer. I mean, it's invading on their space. I love drag shows. I got to hear Mayonnaise speak at the Fairness Rally a couple weeks ago. I do appreciate the fact that the senator did take the time to meet with Mayonnaise. I think that's great. But it's just anti-queer. It's anti-drag. It's ruining an art form that someone also makes money off of to help, you know, have a living. And it's just really sad that we are attacking such a beautiful form of art and expression and a place, you know, I like to go to drag shows. I know a lot of people who do. They're fun. They're entertaining. And I don't even see kids at them anyway. So
I mean, the opposition to drag generally is just so, like, it's just so gross because it is like, you would say something like this, so you call it like a beautiful art form or whatever. And the thing that happens is that somebody is like, oh, this is what they're calling a beautiful art form. And they take like the most sexually explicit view of drag that you could possibly imagine and are like, is this a beautiful art form, Allison? And it's just like, you know what? There's lots of things that are sexually explicit. There are lots of things that are inappropriate for children in many adults' eyes. That could be as simple as like cleaning the house, right? That you can turn anything sexually explicit if you want to. That doesn't mean it's necessarily sexually explicit.
And right. And I just think of at the Oscars on Sunday when I saw John Cena's bare naked body basically on TV, on live primetime cable network, and no one seemed to complain about it at all. But yeah. God forbid we've got a drag show going on.
John Cena in drag. That's the answer to the question.
I mean, that's the only thing that seems to matter. But, you know, if you're going to be outraged about one thing, you better be outraged about another. So,
yeah, I bet John Cena would do drag.
I don't know if you ever watched him do Jimmy Fallon's Ill bit, but he was dressed up as a little dolly. And just imagine John Cena like in a dress and like his big muscular bulky arms just.
It seems like it would be really funny. Yeah. I'm into this. All right, let's leave this topic before I get sad. Okay. What aren't we so sure about? These are the last three bills we want to talk about. Things that we're a little confused about. What's going on here? And the first up is the school choice bill. So there are two school choice bills making their way through the legislature, HB 2 and HB 208. The changes that both bills are trying to make are a constitutional amendment that is in reaction to a Supreme Court case that was filed about the ability of charter schools to receive funding and about vouchers. So that's like what the Supreme Court was about, and so they required a constitutional amendment to change it. Josh Calloway kind of got the ball rolling by filing HB 208, which would have been a constitutional amendment that would have accomplished this goal. And the leadership of the House followed up with HB 2. HB 2 is simpler than HB 208, but probably more conservative. So it's a very clean, simple bill to understand. HB 208 like tries to deal with some of the opposition to charter schools by like making some changes to. Anyways, we did a whole show about this several months ago, and I really encourage you to go back and listen to that if you want like an analysis of the actual bills and what they are doing. So both of these things made a bunch of news last month, but then both bills kind of languished. It seemed like leadership would favor HB 2 since it's a low numbered bill. Those usually indicate a higher priority of the leadership in the chamber. And then also we had a member of leadership actually sponsoring HB 2, but neither bill had received a committee assignment until yesterday. So yesterday HB 2 was assigned to the Elections, Constitution, and Intergovernmental Affairs Committee. And I think now that that seal has been broken, I expect for this bill to start moving pretty quickly. One last thing about this, keep in mind that the bill is a constitutional amendment, and therefore would need to be passed by both the legislature and then later by the voters. So that's something to keep in mind. I don't know, Allison, what do you think? Is this bill going to start moving? Do you think that we're going to get to vote on charter schools here in Kentucky?
Yes, because that's the Republican Party of Kentucky's favorite way to lose, is through a constitutional amendment on the ballot. I definitely think it will. I'm currently on Twitter right now trying to see what's going on with that secretive meeting that they had after the House adjourned. And it looks like they're meeting on it right now. Eddie from KEA went to testify against it, which thank you, Eddie Campbell, for being amazing as always in doing that. We all know it's going to happen. I mean, mm-hmm. It's going to drive people out to the polls in November to vote against it. KEA is a force to be reckoned with. They are going to organize around it. It's sad that it's going to happen, but at the GLCLC event last night, JCTA had representation there because they are part of the Labor Council. And hearing like more about the bill and what charter schools would mean, like when the way they broke it down just made me so mad.
Mm-hmm.
Property taxes pay for a lot of this stuff, and they would get all changed with the codes, with the schools and voucher systems and scholarship. And it's just so dumb. That's mm-hmm. the word of the day for me is dumb. Everything is dumb.
It's the word for the legislative session every year.
The word for the legislative session, just
it's dumb. It's always just dumb.
It just sucks that knowing it's probably going to pass.
Yeah, I just
vote on it.
I just think, you know, yes, the KEA is an organization to be reckoned with. They do have a good track record of being on the winning side of these sort of votes that happen before voters. They have a high approval rating, I think higher than Republicans think. People like teachers, it turns out. But at the same time, I just don't think that this is popular. People don't want charter schools. They don't. I'm sorry. Like, you might have gotten, like, 10 years ago, especially when you had, like, more Democrats kind of on the side of, like, pro-charter, that's one thing. Those people were always misguided in my mind. That's okay. You're allowed to be wrong every once in a while. But I think basically having seen how these things have gone in places like Louisiana, I think people are like, wow, we really don't want that here. So now you basically have all of the Democrats who are like, no, this is really bad. And a huge chunk of Republicans that are like, I may not like trans people, but man, you don't mess with my school. And that is the situation I think we're going to find ourselves in. So that is that one. We'll see what happens. I agree with you. It's likely to pass. All right, HB5, the Safer Kentucky Act. Another one of those things where we're like, what's going on here? So the Safer Kentucky Act, which is a gravely conservative piece of legislation sponsored mainly by suburban Louisville Republicans, made a lot of news early in the legislative session when supporters and especially detractors talked about how the bill would impact Louisville. After a lot of debate, the bill passed the House with a few Republicans voting against it, and then the bill just, like, totally languished. After it passed in late January, it moved to the Senate. It was added to the Judiciary Committee docket. But since February 7th, when it got assigned to that committee, there has been nothing that has happened. Whitney Westerfield is the chair of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, and I think it's fair to say that for most of his career in the legislature, he has been one of the main bulwarks against Republicans' worst instincts on criminal justice issues. And I think back to 2018 when Senator Westerfield ended up supporting this gang bill, as it was called at the time. But he did a lot of work with a committee substitute. So, you know, he's going against his caucus a lot about this bill. His committee substitute on this bill really did blunt the worst parts of the language in that bill. He did eventually vote for it and got a lot of flack from it from criminal justice advocates. But I do think his work there is something to be commended, even though he did eventually vote for it. So anyways, that's kind of like what's going on with it. In addition to this, one of the things I saw today was KY Policy did release an analysis that they had done about the bill that said it would cost $1 billion over a decade, mostly due to increased healthcare and housing a bunch of aging inmates, because the law would make it put more people in prison. So that is where we're at. So Allison, I wondered, what do you think about HB 5 and the Safer Kentucky Act? Do you think this bill is going to move? I think the optimist in me thinks the bill will probably see some changes in the Senate, especially since it has to get through Whitney Westerfield in order to pass. But nothing good ever happens. So what do you think?
This is one of those bills that changed dramatically in the past 24 hours, because Jared Bauman from Southeastern in Louisville, I believe, it was revealed today by some fantastic reporter.
Oh, gosh. I saw this too. Yes.
I can't remember. Was it the Courier or Louisville Public?
No, it was LPM. Yeah, that got
was
it.
Was it LPM who did some fabulous reporting on the fact that this man literally plagiarized the data that he pulled to discuss why this bill was necessary from Georgia? Like, basically copy-paste.
It was data. Wild. I don't know.
That's just crazy.
I don't know. I don't know what plagiarism is. I've never really been able to fully understand it. But it is like it was this bill in Georgia, I think. And the KYCIR came with it, and they like talked to this guy who was like, yeah, I was like reading this bill, and like I looked at all the things that were cited, and I was like, I've seen this before. And he was like, dang, that this is like basically exactly what's in a bill in Georgia. So
yeah, he was one of my students when I was teaching, he would have gotten an F on his paper because he would have been plagiarizing.
Well, unfortunately, but he's not a student. He's a legislator, and they're a legislator, and they're allowed to do stuff like that.
Which is even worse. But, I remember when that bill came out, and it had the – did it come out? Did they announce that they were doing it before the election?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And I remember reading all the bullet points on that graphic, and it was like wiretapping and – stop and frisk basically was going to make a comeback. And it just was, I mean, it's definitely been toned down a lot from that, but there's still a lot more toning down that needs to happen with this bill. I do agree. It's going to start with Senator Westerfield in the Senate, who is, you know, turning a little liberal in his final days.
It's going out so, in good guy mode. That's what I say. Yeah.
So who knows what's going to happen, but it's definitely being amended and fixed and worked on. So who even knows? I couldn't even tell you what I think the final bill is going to look like, because there's just no telling what's going to happen to it. But yeah, I just want to like really make sure people understand that this man quite literally copy pasted data and sources and put it in his own bill. Like, that's what we're dealing with in the Kentucky legislature, folks.
Yeah,
that's what we're dealing with. Just dumb.
Good for Josie Raymond for asking all those questions when the bill passed. The bill is just dumb. I was going to say that, but you beat me to it. Last thing that we want to talk about, President Stivers' higher ed bill. So Senate President Stivers' SB1, which we talked about at length a few weeks ago, it deals with improving research at Kentucky universities. I think it's a good bill, and it is making just the most normal progress through the legislature. The bill came to the Senate floor. It passed without any opposition the week before last. It made its way to a House committee. It is being heard. It will probably pass out of that committee, go to the House floor, and then pass like a normal progression. So it hasn't passed yet, but just to say, like, They do know how to do this. They do know how to do normal, like, hey, let's talk to people about what the problems are. Let's come up with a bill that solves these problems. Let's file it. Let's have hearings. Let's get a vote on it. Let's build consensus and let's pass something. We should demand that our legislature do everything in this fashion because it is possible. That is some good news. So hopefully this bill does continue on its normal progression. But anything that you want to say, Allison, about SB1 before we end?
Good for him. That's all I'll say.
Good for him. Absolutely. He can do it. You can be a normal guy. You can be a normal Senate president.
Congrats on being normal. Congrats on doing the bare minimum.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is what we should demand of him every time. All right, Allison, that is it for the things we want to talk about, but that was lots. That was lots to talk about. As we are ending the show here, the University of Louisville is up 19-11 on NC State.
Don't talk about it.
So they just hit a free throw, so they're up by 9 points. It's like the biggest lead they've had all season.
They're going to win and make a little run in the tournament.
They're going to go to the NCAA tournament after winning. They're going to beat North Carolina, go to the NCAA tournament, and they're going to give Kenny Payne a 4-year extension. That's what's going to happen.
Don't say that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for us today. If you want to, you can find us on My Old Kentucky Podcast at My Old KY Pod on Twitter, X, Facebook, and Instagram. You can find us at the podcasting app of your choice. We have an occasional newsletter at tinyletter.com/myoldkynewsletter, and you can find us on Forward Kentucky or the Dimcast Network. All right, everybody, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.